It's that time on a Friday, no less, when we look to get our view from the north. Now, doing his thing for NBC Sports Northwest in Portland, covering the Seahawk beat, Lil Duck Football. Check out the website. Also, see what he's up to on Twitter. Use that handle, Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things with you heading into another loaded weekend?
Things are going pretty well, man. How about you?
No complaints. Like I said, I just live for this time of year. So let's hit the rewind button. The Sunday nighter, the Bears with Khalil Mack.
Okay, click. Your phone has been disconnected.
You've been like Eddie Murphy in the first Beverly Hills Cop. I am not listening to Jeffrey. La 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 la.
I'm not listening to you, man. That's funny. Anyway, continue.
So, I guess by now you probably know the details. What was it, an emotional roller coaster in the Fentress household?
Well, I was in Denver, remember? So I didn't really watch much of it at all. I was driving to the airport right after I got out of the locker room about an hour later, and I saw the score, and they were winning. I thought, that sounds pretty good. And then I get to the airport, and they're coming back as I'm taking back the rental car, and they're coming back as I take the shuttle back to the airport as I'm in security. So I put the phone on the radio on my phone. I listened to the final 5 minutes, and it was just horrific.
I forgot you were at the Seahawks game. I don't know. Maybe that's for the best.
That might have been for the best. I think that was for the best, actually. I think had I actually sat through that for 3 hours, I might not be available for you today. I might be in a straitjacket in a mental asylum right now.
But, and then, of course, this week, ironically, your NFL heart meets your job at Soldier Field with both those teams off harsh losses. You know, I know it's early, but, man, considering the division each play in, the loser of this game is going to find themselves in a very early uh-oh situation, aren't they?
Yeah, this is definitely an uh-oh game. Now, the good thing is that both of them lost close games. If this game's close, you lose another close game, there's still hope that you can, you know, because the NFL has a lot of close games. If you can stay close in games, you have a chance to win, so it wouldn't be complete disaster. But neither one, you know, especially when you consider the Bears and Denver didn't make the playoffs last year. So if you're Seattle and you lost to two non-playoff teams that were 5-11, both drafting in the top 10, that's not good. If you're Chicago, losing to Green Bay is respectable other than the fact that you blew a fourth-quarter lead, and then if you turn around and lose to a non-playoff team like Seattle that just lost to a non-playoff team like Denver, then you're like, oh, crap, what really are we? So it's definitely not a do-or-die, but definitely a big game for both teams. And it's Brian Urlacher night. You know that?
I did not know that. Wow, that's pretty cool.
I think they're going to retire his jersey.
I was going to say, are you going to get a 5-4 to go with your 3-4 jersey that I know you have?
No, I would get a 5-0 before I got a 5-4. I don't buy modern jerseys. I'm either going to buy a legend that I grew up on, like a Sam. Like I have a Sosa jersey, I have a Jordan jersey, and I have a Peyton jersey.
I see. If somebody told me you have to pick a Bears jersey, I'd probably, well, Peyton would be the obvious one, but then I would go Wilbur Marshall. I would go 58. I just
love Wilbur.
Yeah, he was too much. we'll get back to Seattle in a bit, but there was a piece on the CBS Sports site about the NBA. They picked the all-time starting five for each franchise, and a guy can only be on one team. So Kareem was on the Bucks, not the Lakers.
Really?
And obviously, they went with Shaq. He had to play 5 years for a team, and they tried to balance it. So, you know, Chamberlain was with the Warriors, not the 76ers. It was really interesting. If you go to CBSSports.com, click on the NBA home, scroll down, you'll see it. You could actually get lost there like I did for about 2 hours. But your Bulls, Jordan, Pippen, Derrick Rose. I'm sorry, what?
I said my Bulls.
Yeah.
I'm echoing you. I'm just echoing you.
I got you. Bob Butterbean Love at forward. That was their five. Rodman only played 3 years, so I guess the guys who might have got left off, maybe Horace Grant or Chet Walker.
Will Perdue.
You like that five?
What about Will Perdue?
Bill Wennington? How about Bill Wennington?
Luke Longley. You know what? I'm good with that. I think that's right. I don't have any problems with that. That's a solid team. Now Love, I look him up. I knew Love was good, but I didn't know how good. I looked him up. Career 21-7, 7 rebounds, 21 points for the Bulls in 9 seasons. I think that's better all around than Rodman and Horace Grant. So I can live with that. I might have to go plug that into NBA 2K and see how it worked out.
No, it's pretty cool because, like I've told you before, that's kind of the era I grew up in. And, like, the last really good Bulls team before Jordan, they were in the West Finals against the Warriors in 1975 with Van Leer and Sloan and Love. Yeah, you go back and look at that, it's like people completely blank on that. And why would they know about that unless they're a psycho like me?
Right. Van Leer passed away just like 3 or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, maybe. No, I remember when that happened. Yeah, I remember talking to my dad, and you know, we remember seeing him in the heyday of the Knicks at the Garden when they actually won things back 47 and 45 years ago.
Right.
I have not asked you about the Cubbies in the while. It seemed like they got some separation. They built a 5-game lead. Now it's just a game and a half. You know, it looks like even if they lost the division, still getting the wild card. They just lost one of their relievers, Pedro Strop. National
How long
League.
Be up for?
2 weeks. So it looks like that C-Sheck guy is probably going to close. But the thing about the NL, you know, they don't have the Red Sox or the Astros, you know, a really, really dominating team. So how you feeling heading into these final 16 games of the regular season?
Not good at all, man. I'm just glad the Dodgers are underachieving because their lineup looks stacked, but they're struggling. Cody Bellinger's having a down year. I'm not feeling good about this team at all, man. They've been banged up. They've been injured. The bullpen suspect. They lost Darvish. But somehow they still have the best record in the NL, which is, I guess, should be encouraging, but I just feel like they're not a team built for the playoffs. The bullpen's a circus. Brandon Moreau's been out. Now Strope's out for a couple of weeks. Gosh, I don't know, man. They're deep, though. I thought the Daniel Murphy pickup was pure genius, putting him at second and helping the lineup, but they haven't really picked it up lately. So I'm a little nervous, I'm not going to lie. And I do not want to see them in a wild card game. That's like the one-and-done thing is not good. They need to win the division, so hopefully they can hold on. I think they had a 1-game lead still after yesterday over Milwaukee because Milwaukee won yesterday, right? No, they beat the Nationals yesterday, so I think they're 1.5.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Well, you're talking about not wanting to be in the wild card game. I root for a team that's going to win like 102 games and end up in the wild card game.
I know that's just messed up, man. It's okay. It just shouldn't be a one off. It should be a 2 out of 3. You can play that in 3 days.
I've had people tell me, well, now that the Yankees are going to get screwed, they'll probably change the rule. And I'm like, lighten
they
up.
They might. If the Yankees go out, who would they play right now? They would play the A's, right?
Yep.
Yeah, they play the A's. So if the A's were to beat them, I bet they change the rule next year. I'm calling it right now.
Well, I think they need to change the rule the next day and make it a 2 out of 3.
We know the A's won game one. Yes, we're calling it game one. It was not a one and done. Actually, we are changing the rules right now. Game two will be in Yankee Stadium. Thank you very much.
Oh, man. Let's get to the Seahawks. And a duck, once upon a time, Deion Jordan, the third pick in the draft. Hard to believe it's his fifth year, and he's got 7 total sacks. We know he had the problems with the pads. We know this is his last chance. You wrote about him, talked to him after practice. How's he feeling, and what's the plan as far as maybe expanding his role moving forward?
Yeah, he feels pretty good about Sunday. He played 15 snaps. That was his first action of the season, carrying preseason. He missed all of preseason. Like, every day it was like a Deion Jordan update. He's progressing. They were hopeful he could play in the opener. He did. Mostly third down situations as a pass rusher. He said he felt good physically after the game. He's just trying to get in shape, get his fundamentals down because he hasn't been able to do much. His role should expand in Chicago. But this is one of those things where if he can stay healthy, they could have found the guy. You can go on YouTube and look at his highlights last year. He played 5 games, had 4 sacks. There's a good highlight package on there that sort of breaks down all of his big plays. He showed great pursuit on the backside when runs are going away from him. He did some 2-gap stuff where he stood up a tackle and then made a read and got by the guy and made a play, or just speed rushing around the edge. I mean, he still has the skills that made him a top 5 pick to Miami a long time ago. He's just battled, obviously the PED situation, which, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you, he got busted for it a few times, but, man, it's paid off because he's huge. I don't know if you've seen him a long time, but when I first saw him in person at training camp, that was the first time I'd seen him since he went pro. So that's, 5 years ago? And, my God, he's just ginormous compared to what he was. And I almost felt bad because I said, dude, you're huge. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, dude, he got busted 3 times for PEDs. But he was like, oh, thank you, man. I've been working hard. I'm thinking, yeah, you have. But, no, I mean, he's 6'6", 284. I think he left Oregon around 6'6", 245, 250. It's all muscle. He's just a lean, mean sacking machine if he can stay healthy. And he bull rushes guys because they're at 284 now. He can actually get into tackles and just bull rush him a little bit, then use his speed. So if he can round into form, I'll tell you right now, let's say he gets full speed by the 4th game. In those 12 games, he should be able to give him 8 or 9 sacks. And that's not an exaggeration as long as he stays healthy.
No, it's going to be fun to look forward to. We're talking with Aaron Fentress of NBC Sports Northwest. So I was looking at my portfolio today and thought, I need advice from Michael Kendricks. But this dude might be doing some time. What is Seattle saying about the logic of signing a guy who's likely to be playing for Burt Reynolds' Mean Machine down the road?
Well, they haven't talked today. I don't think Carroll's talked yesterday. Usually he doesn't talk the next day. He'll talk tomorrow, I believe. Usually it's because they're playing Monday night, so everything was pushed out. So he's not talking today.
Right.
And I'm obviously not there. So I don't think he's going to answer any questions about that. I don't think anyone from Seattle has said anything about it because they haven't been required to talk. But, yeah, it's interesting, But I saw some people on Twitter complaining about it, like, oh, he's a criminal, blah, blah, blah. But, like, for me, of all the things a guy could do, insider trading is, the most innocuous. Like, he didn't punch anyone. He didn't beat up anyone. He didn't steal anything. He wasn't pointing a gun at somebody. You know what I mean? It's like, he just, I told one guy on Twitter, I said, hey, Martha Stewart did the same thing. She's still, the darling of the cooking world, right? You can still go on and do cooking shows. Why can't my man play some football? So I
and by
figured,
the way, but
know,
how rare is it?
It just is what it is. Well, what's funny, though, is that so Cleveland cut him, right? Because they're like, oh, well, this guy's going to probably go to prison. But if you're Cleveland, it makes sense because you're trying to build something. So you don't want to bring in a guy for one season. If you're Seattle, you need linebacker help because KJ Wright's out and Shaquin Griffin had a mediocre game. Then it's like, I'm getting a guy who started in the Super Bowl, started 74 games for the Eagles, just won the Super Bowl, and I can plug him in at linebacker. I'm going to do that for 1 year. If he goes to jail afterwards, oh, well, not my problem. I had him for 1 year. So I think it's a good move football-wise for Seattle. I think people need to get over the fact that he has a basic conviction hanging over his head because he was just messing around with stocks. Who cares? Am I wrong?
Well, first of all, when do we get a pro athlete get in trouble and he becomes a white-collar criminal like he's working for Enron or something?
I find it appealing. Like, to me, it's hilarious. It's like, good for him. Well, good for him. You were trying. So Dan Sheldon today, we did a hit for The Bridge that aired tonight. We taped it earlier, and he said there's probably some NFL owners that are probably like, hey, good job, because they can probably relate, People have a lot of money who maybe try and look for stock tips. They're probably like, yeah, good for you.
Yeah, it's the first trade that ever involved an owner seeking a financial advisor.
Maybe that's why Paul Allen was like, hey, sign that guy. Maybe he can give me some tips.
this kills me. Yesterday you wrote about the Denver game and something we talked about, the offensive line, the running game. which, you know, since beast mode has kind of struggled. You know, you saw the competition between Penny and Carson. Otherwise, you know, he had one long run. Otherwise, they were shaky. What have they had to say this week about the performance of the running game and the offensive line and how concerned they are that maybe they're already leaning too much on Russell Wilson?
Yes, it's a very complicated situation. So first, Penny was rusty, according to Carroll. Like, he wasn't hitting the holes right. He wasn't reading things right because he hadn't done anything since the first preseason game because he was dealing with his injury. They liked what Carson did. You know, yeah, he just had the one big run, but he had some nice other shorter runs and looked like the power back they expect him to be. But each guy only got 7 carries, in part because Carroll kept pointing out we were 2 for 12 on third downs, which, of course, in his drives, that's 10 drives that were pretty much ended unless they went 4 on 4. But the other part of that is that most of the success in the passing game came on first and second down. I went and looked at all their first and second downs, and that's when their plays came in. Will Disley, all three of Will Disley's catches for 105 yards came on, I believe, first down, including the touchdown. That was first and 10 to 15 after Earl Thomas's touchdown. So it's almost like your offensive coordinator, you're having success with play action and passing the ball on first and second down, but you're not running like you want to. But because you're not running like you want to, you're in a lot of third and longs, and then the pass rushes get to you, you're giving up sacks. So I think all told, the fact that they were able to put up 24 points is a good sign, given that they couldn't run and given that they gave up 6 sacks. But at the same time, with the defense not going to be as great as they used to be in the past, they have to be able to control the ball. I mean, they did that anyway when they had a good defense, but they have to be able to control the ball, keep defenses focused on that run, to take pressure off of Wilson and the defense.
All right, I want to wrap what you wrote about college football. And, of course, we know you played at Portland State. So, clearly, Oregon beating the Vikings is their ticket back to the playoff. But you talked about Oregon, you know, maybe winning 10 games, maybe better. So be it this historically soft schedule or other factors, what makes you think that early this season?
You know, it's funny, as I was writing that, and I was thinking, you know what, I'm going to post this, and then like 2 weeks later, I'm going to say something negative about the Ducks, or someone's going to call me a hater. I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't, right? No, but okay. And watch Talking Ducks tonight, because there's a funny segment where I talk about this, and when I'm done, Joey Harrington's like, what did you just say? And Joey's like, what the hell? Okay, so here's the deal. So coming into the season, you had 3 guaranteed wins, right? Non-conference.
Oh, yeah.
When you looked at 9 conference games, you had to win 5 and 4 to win 8. So I figured that was the minimum, to win 5 and 4. So the question was, could they get 2 more wins to get to 10? So my 4 likely losses were Arizona, UCLA, not likely losses, possible losses, not likely, were Arizona, UCLA, Stanford, and Washington, and then maybe Utah, right? So I'm thinking, okay, those are the 4. I'll throw Utah to the side. Those are the 4 where I think, you know, there could be some trouble. But UCLA and Arizona are brutal. They're 0-4. They're, like, struggling mightily. So now at this point, those to me look like they go into the probable win category. So if you slide those into the probable win category, now, boom, you got 10 wins. If the other 8 are given, according to me, you got 10. But here's the caveat to this. Cal and Washington State look pretty solid. So maybe those 2 games, which are on the road, maybe those become dicey, or one of them does. So they're still, you know, it's not a guarantee, but on paper right now, with the 3 guaranteed non-conference wins, I think this is a 10-win team. Like, I think the 2 losses where I would say, okay, they realistically should or could lose these games are UW and Stanford. Other than that, they should win all the other games on their schedule. Now, that could all change in a month. We'll see how things look. But as of right now, this looks like a 10-win team to me.
And also the key to the whole thing. I did. I wasn't a math major. I was a minor. But the bottom line is, of course, everything we say about this team hinges on one thing. Number 10 is healthy.
My son's in the back of the car. He just went, what did you just say?
You're confusing Harrington. You're confusing your kids. I'm completely lost. But anybody, he's Aaron Fentress. He's leaving us to fend for ourselves as he heads to the Windy City. Check him out, NBC Sports Northwest on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. You travel safe, my friend, and we will catch up next week.
Sounds good. And I might end up at the Oregon-Stanford game. We'll see.
All right. Well, I'm counting on it because the other guys are starting. All right. Get easy, AF. Take care,
all right, man. Later.